Welcome back, Red Ice members. It's great to have you with us. We are talking with Dan Winter about, well, pretty much all and everything at this point. Very, very interesting discussion about the golden mean, fractality, gravity, electromagnetism, sacred geometry, and we even talked about our past, our genetic and historical past, as it were. And I'd like to begin this segment to talk a little bit more about architecture and ask you, Dan, if you will, if you have any kind of I guess suggestions in regards to materials or the type of house that the people could live in to better harness, I guess, the properties of fractality and what we've been talking about in the first segment. I myself am personally interested in building straw bale houses, for instance. Do you have any input on that, or have you spent any of your time building a house or maybe even drawing up plans for a house, Dan?
Well, yes, you know, we are doing these conferences on biologic architecture all the time. And at goldenmean.info/architecture, as we mentioned, you'll see the work of Michael Rice, holistichouseplans.com, and Olga from Prague. You'll see many examples. The sequence of steps, roughly, of course, is you need a magnetic map of your site, and the place where the magnetic lines is centered most like a rose is a good start for getting the compression that will cause life force, the sweet chi, of course. The basement should be built without metal. They're using slate blocks and things like that. The walls are made of organic material and have natural convection air moving up through them. The steel and aluminum is almost entirely eliminated. Almost exclusively biologic materials, stone throughout. Steiner taught that the children should never touch metal and plastic and synthetics. And the same is true for everyone, because that's what kills your aura if the charge can't propagate through it.
Hmm.
Your key steps are really magnetic mapping and biologic materials. I could give you a little thought about the straw bale question.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I started on this quest in part through my work with Phil Callahan, who I worked with for years. And, of course, he was a radar engineer in the Wales, I believe, during the war. And he realized that everyone in this one village was living to be over 100 years old. And he tried to figure out why. He went into their straw houses and realized that when you walked in, your hair would stand up. The charge was so great.
Really?
And he figured out why. The hemp, particularly or straw, when you take the mist of the trace mineral of a sea spray and then bake it in the sun and do that recursively, you create a fabulous biological fractal capacitor, which pretty much defines a bioactive electric field. So those ancient straw buildings baked in the sun with sea spray were creating capacitors in which everyone was living to be over 100 years old. That's a good start for understanding what you need with a building. You could even try in your straw bale house to spray some live seawater, hopefully from the depth, and leave it bake in the sun several times. And you'll find the capacitance becomes more fractal, more harmonic inclusive, more phase conjugate, defining the ability to germinate a seed with that electric field, which is really the definition of architecture.
Wow, that's really interesting. And if you don't mind me asking, how are you living? Do you incorporate any of this in your own way that you live?
Well, we live in a little village here in South France. Now, it is a clay, ceramic kind of building, but it's far from perfect, sadly. But, you know, real estate is location, location, and location.
Sure.
One thing we did right here, if you do a 3D animation of the mountain that we live on called Canigou, the sacred Cathar mountain, it turns out to be a pine cone, literally. And the name for that is called Perpignan, which is where we're near. And it's halfway on the line between the Magdalen Tower at Rennes-le-Château and the Magdalen Tower at Girona.
Really?
Giron, which is the phase conjugate point where the wizard called Twin Towers in Lord of the Ring at Aragon, which is the name of the area, and they would find themselves projected to the top of the Mount Canigou when they did their spell. So the phase conjugate point is the place to live. And there's a certain magnetic line going through this house on which I have seen through the sun from that magnetic line.
Okay. Would you care to tell us more about that? That's very interesting.
Bit of a story, but years ago I started an e-group called the Solar Shamans. It's now called the Solar Heart Community at yahoogroups.com with another Kundalini counselor, Susan Carlson. And we had gathered a large number of shaman who had one experience in common of vividly remembering going through the sun. And they were consciously aware of what it was like to project their focus through the eye of the sun. Actually, that's the name of the place where we do seminars on this in Tintagel in Cornwall.
Mm-hmm.
And the eye of the sun turns out to be, the center of the sun is not hot. It's actually cool and inviting. It's an eyeball and organ of perception, as is any phase conjugate field. The geometry there is called Anu, which is 7 spins out, 5 in, and a bit of a long story based on the heart of hydrogen and fusion. But the heart of the sun is a compression place for charge through which everything in the solar system is sorted based on the wavelengths of hydrogen. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the ring pass knot. If you want to get out of here alive, that's the only way out.
Huh.
And so this is why your ancestors, the An, Ezun, Anu, and Anunnaki, were right. called sun gods.
Right.
A sun god is one whose DNA makes a phase conjugate dielectric field, which is coherent enough to penetrate through the heart of the sun.
And what you're saying is that as a conscious being, you can tap into this and see through the sun,
yes.
in that sense then?
Yes. The sun will allow you the privilege of seeing through its eye, in the same way as the Earth allowed Bentov to see through its eye in his book, Cosmic Comic Book, after Stalking the Wild Pendulum, as a result of his Kundalini.
Hmm. How about, sorry to interrupt there, but how about the nature of the sun, if we go into that a little bit? Because I think it's interesting, when, for instance, when we talked about CMEs before, coronal mass ejections, when you have these areas that are opening up, you always see that it's a black inside of the sun, meaning that it seems to be almost like, well, some people have postulated that it's a black hole for lack of a better term, but it's a hollow area inside of the sun, and it's the how should I phrase this, the effect of what the sun is doing is what we can see at the surface level, but inside it's actually pretty much nothing visible. Do you have any input on that, Dan?
Well, there was some speculation that just like the phonon wave of the Earth's iron-hot core was dodeca, that the key to the alchemy of the Earth's magnetic, but that the solar core, in fact, is, if you look at the solar flare symmetries, ultimately going to be recursive and pentodeca and golden ratio based, as we know, is precisely what the clairvoyants saw when they saw the heart of the sun, Leadbeater and Besant and Babbitt, when they drew the Anu in the first place, 7-spin, 5-spin symmetry, which is also Ophanic, by the way. So the heart of the sun is clearly a place where plasma compression has become non-destructive, and charge acceleration from that place is therefore possible. And that's where you get into these song lines going between stars, the kind of Jodie Foster contact kind of thing.
That it's a place where you can jump to other solar systems or what?
Yes, yes. And another way of saying this in simpler terms is if your ET arrived in heavy metal, you know they're low end and from the wrong side of the track. If they arrived in an electric field, which is phase conjugate made of genetic material and came through the heart of the sun, then those ETs are worth talking to.
Well, that's an interesting input for sure. So do you think that this has been done in the past or is being done right now even then perhaps?
If you read Anton Park's concept of Stargate, it's actually the charge compression portal, which was used for transportation quite practically. For example, our word Jerusalem, where they have all the wars, the meaning of the word in Sumerian, Anunnaki, and Draco was Uru Asa El-M, the place where the Uru, Usu the dragon, Asa queens, made the L or phase shift. It's literally a implosive charge compression device, just like Amenti was for Akhenaten.
Hmm. That's interesting.
There's ancient soul memories about having wars over these places, which is what the war in the Middle East is really about, because it's literally true. If you cannot access a bliss temple, a Shem, then you have very little chance of going back through the sun, and your DNA knows that it's fatal to be stuck below the speed of light, unlike your doctor who doesn't know.
And you mentioned something else there about not being a nuts and bolts type of a craft, if we talk about crafts from other planets and so forth, or other civilizations, that they actually have potentially a living material that they transport themselves in, right?
The Aldebaran culture we hear uses genetic base material craft, whereas the more fallen Nephilitic Draco use the metallic, which include the craft which An brought from Draco through Pleiades here. Although the Nibiru concept, if we read Anton Parks, was actually a spurious moon that came off of Marduk inside of Jupiter and is now Mercury.
Okay, Mercury, huh? Okay, interesting. Well, I heard that Venus has been expelled from Jupiter.
Oh, no, I think you're right. I believe it's Venus. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Anton Parks, it's Venus, right?
Yes.
And interestingly, see, the Venus has that profound pent recursive retrograde orbit, and the moon has a precisely 13 circuit retrograde orbit. And if you think of what that does, I believe one of the reasons the hollow metal titanium moon is the mechanism of our quarantine is its 13 circuit retrograde orbit, the physics of Mayan calendric, because the quarantine is established by the non-phase conjugate capacitive cocoon, which the moon establishes by its 13 circuit orbit.
Okay, and you're saying that the moon then is the artificial object, the craft.
I believe the NASA seismic data confirmed it was hollow and metal. The story is that it's titanium, that it was towed in here with a rather destructive purpose.
But isn't at the same time the moon utilizing things as the tides on this planet, which actually, have in one sense, at this stage at least, are making sure that life is stable on this planet? Because if the tide would go, then things that we know at least would be gone, right?
It's a controversial question, and I know people think it's sort of a bit rebellious, but the Andromedans suggested towing it away, and I think they're probably right. But one thing that's for sure, if we look at the clairvoyant sightings on the backside of the moon, who is the famous remote viewer who viewed the backside of the moon? I'll think of it in a minute. Very scary place. It's not good. And you can see why. When Gurdjieff was right, you know, incoherent emotion will always feed the moon. Coherent emotion will always feed the sun. Now we know the physics of why. The moon is precisely opposite to phase conjugate, hollow and metal, which is pretty much the definition of evil, which is why when during a full moon, the best thing you can do is duck.
What? Really? Okay. That's very interesting, because to me, it seems like it's a perfect balance between, well, again, I mean, in symbolic terms, you have the sun and the moon. And I mean, even look at when the eclipses take place, the perfect alignment that takes place. It seems to me that at least as you, I guess, are alluding to and suggesting here, is that we are indeed part of some kind of experiment. And in that sense, Earth, as you said before, then is this genetic arc, right, where many different species and different kinds of plants and so forth have been don't know ultimately what the purpose for the experiment is,
library. The library was valuable,
right?
But we need to recognize that the place where parasites are invited is opposite to fractal, and that is precisely why the moon is so full of parasites. Mars was, on the other hand, sort of part of the transition. It was used as a stationary by the Anunnaki Draco, but then they miscalculated the incident angle of asteroid trajectory, and it lost its orbit, precisely correlate to its loss of magnetohydrodynamic, its magnetic field. So loss of atmosphere on Mars, called total recall, is the big part of that memory experiment.
Really interesting. So suggest that other people are knowing what's going on as well, because they're making movies about it, right?
Yeah. But as I say, people who find this history story, and I think Anton Parks, again, is the best.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I think Michael Sarian's a sweet guy in the Celtic, but he's profoundly confused when it comes to John Dee and the Anunnaki. Profoundly confused, sadly. Nice guy, but people who think this history story is too controversial, that's fine. I wouldn't argue with them. What I would say is learn the physics and dump the history. And the physics is simple. If you look at the moon, you see why it's pretty much the definition of evil. It is because it is so opposite to phase conjugate.
Sorry to cut you off, but I can't. To me, it creates the balance, meaning that without that part, it would not create the properties that we have on this planet, which to me makes no sense. It seems to be that we're in a symbolic way, in a mythological way also, that these two bodies have represented the balance between the forces in the universe. And at least to me, these forces in the universe are the two forces that gives way for life to to exist at all. It seems to be, otherwise we're going to have too much of one thing and not the other. I'm getting this idea about balance again, but what you're saying is that we should go only solar, if you know what I mean, and not focus on the lunar at all. Is that what you're saying?
Well, at the symbolic level, the moon's hollow metal core, which is profoundly square electric field, is not phase conjugate, would be what the hex does for charge. It isolates charge. And that's what the moon does for us. Mm. The sun is the opposite, golden ratio in the hydrogen geometry, Balmer series, all that. And so it's a charge distributor. And the balance between hex and pent, which is how DNA actually creates life, is you have the container, which is the hex, the seven spin symmetry, the seven veils. Then you have the projector, the five spin. And that's what the ion is about. So yes, you need the projector and the container, the seven spins
yes.
of the tetracube and the five spins of the projector inside out, which is what the ion is. And that was the Ophanum Sigil of Truth in the Cherokee Sacred Space. But on the level of astral hygiene, which I think is something that desperately needs teaching, that the moon represents the opposite of astral hygiene. So these people who run around in the full moon with all these astral entities sucking just don't have a clue what astral hygiene is. And, you know, it's the same reason a lot of people go to church, because they think they need parasites to suck on their aura. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And for people who don't have anything to do with their own bliss, they need parasites to suck on their aura. We will not condemn them. But at a certain point, when you know what you need to do with your bliss, which is to eat it, take it back inside and to squirt it up your own kundalini current, what you need is the opposite of a church full of parasites sucking on your aura.
That's absolutely right. Couldn't agree more. And the hex that you mentioned, that's... is that a seven cycle spin, not a six?
Well, hex symmetry is the shadow of the tetracube, which has seven axes, a spin tree called the seven spin, the seven veil, the seven, you know, the whole seven veils story, dance of seven veils. And,
okay.
And that's the number of threads on the outside of the anu. So it's symbolizing the fact that cubic symmetries isolate charge, because tetraoctacube symmetry always have log functions of two in their harmonic ratio, and that will create maximum destructive interference measurably, and that isolates charge by preventing distribution. Perfect if you're making hex for a honeycomb to store honey. However, if you want distribution, then you want the opposite of that, and biology uses pent and golden ratio, dodecaecosa, for that. So the balance between hex and pent is the balance between octave and phi. Perfect example of that is in brainwave. There are only two brainwave states, period. One is where your brainwave harmonics are golden ratio. That's called bliss, peak perception, enlightenment. You become fractal, you implode. That's called peak perception. Get immortal. And the other is when you make octaves in your brainwaves. When you make octaves in your brainwaves, you create telepathy and channeling, but you do not create bliss.
So these two can be utilized. You can take advantage, if you will, of both then. Meaning that
exactly.
in some circumstances, you might want to tap into the other thing and you actually use the properties of the telepathy and talk with people. But then, on the other hand, you want to disconnect from that and be in your own space, in your own bliss. Is that right?
Well, to make that really practical and getting back to architecture, so I visited Gus Chikachi's house, who introduced me to Buckminster Fuller. And his house was the shape of the top-down view of one rung of the ladder of DNA in Vermont. And in the hex part of the house, octave cube, that's the place in the house where you go for privacy and secrets and isolation and cocooning. In the pent part of the house, that's the place where you go for no secrets and perfect sharing, and you don't want secrets and distribution and marketing and, you know, right. shouting messages. And so that's nature uses hex and pent for precisely those electric reasons.
Very interesting. So again, it doesn't mean that one is good or bad in that sense. It's just what the purpose is of how we want to use
exactly.
those spaces, right?
Exactly. So powers of two will isolate charge. So if you put octaves in your brain, in your headphones, in binaural beats based on the octave, you will create dissociation, which is the isolation of one hemisphere from the other.
Yes.
If you put in the same headphones a cascade but based on Fibonacci to golden ratio, which Dr. Ed Wilson did, which scared Monroe Institute half to death. When you put golden ratio in your headphones, you create transcendence, which is where the brain waves actually create golden ratio coherence going up through the crown, which is the first time transcendence was defined in brainwave literature. So that difference between hex and pent, octaves and golden ratio, it can be precisely taken into brainwave states. And so my bliss tuner invention is profoundly designed to teach that difference. And when you can make the choice, when you can choose to switch gears in your brainwaves at will, that's when you have self-empowerment.
I want to backtrack just a second or two there. You mentioned the Monroe Institute, Robert Monroe. I've read a little bit about some of the experiments and some of the accounts that some things actually went wrong there in one sense. And you mentioned that they got scared as heck. Would you care to elaborate on that? What have you heard about that? Or have you talked with anyone who experienced what they did there?
I didn't know Bob very well, but I know Lori very well, Lori Monroe. So, at that time that I worked there, Ed Wilson was the research director for Bob Monroe, Ed Wilson, MD, very famous. And he had been putting Fibonacci to golden ratio cascades in the headphone binaural beats to introduce brainwave states and projective remote viewing or astral travel.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Monroe, as Ed Wilson put it, was scared to death of that phenomenon because he saw people getting squirted out of their bodies, which is true. And so Ed Wilson left Bob Monroe at that point and came to my farm in Western New York, and we made a documentary film about this. On the one hand, let's teach this story in terms of Drinville Melchizedek and the tetrahedral fire breath. If you visualize two tetra around your body by breathing into two opposing vortex, you make a tetra cube, and that incubates and holds within. Now, if you only do that, eventually you'll have lots of astral parasites, and you have astral hygiene nightmare. Now, Drinville taught that there was a next step, but he was, some people say, well, he was afraid to teach, and others said he said it was dangerous. But the next step is when you take that tetra cube and you tilt your chin back 32 degrees, the chin angle of Sphinx, which is precisely the angle to rotate a cube into a dodecaecosa, which is the only time you get golden ratio. When you do that, your aura changes from hex to pent, and you implode. Now, the upside of that story is once you start imploding, that's the end of parasites because they can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
The downside of that story is if you haven't sorted your memory in advance, you'll be spaced out. You'll be projected in a way that nothing shareable returns. In exactly the same way that is if you haven't sorted your memories before you die, you won't take coherence with you. So in the same way you need to prepare to die well by sorting which memories are shareable, that is which charge can be propagated, called pure intention, coherence, perfected and fractality, predicts your ability to die. It predicts your ability from going from hex to pent in the image of your aura, the tetrahedral fire breath. So you can't go from hex to pent in your aura till you discover pure intention. The same thing applies.
Hmm. And so did you know if any of these experiments that they did conduct, that people actually, what did they do? Did they lose their minds or did it not come back as functional human beings again, or was it okay, you know?
Well, what I can say is people who just do the tetrahedral fire breath and visualize only tetras and cubes around the body, there are many reports of bleeding and astral parasites and problems. So it's not good to just stay in cubic symmetry in your aura image. On the other hand, if you don't feel you're ready, if you can't actually find something shareable in your memories, then you won't be able to actually withstand the implosion that right. actually sorts your aura.
Tell us a bit more about, I mean, astral parasites. Are these just, what's your take on that then? Is this just, again, evil beings hanging around and trying to suck our energy? Or is it, I mean, in that sense, I guess, can we compare them to parasites on this planet? They just latch on to the one that they, you know, that's walking on by, if you know what I mean, a tick or whatever. And occasion occurs, if you know what I mean. The parasite will jump on you and they will suck your blood. Is that the same thing on the astral level, or are we talking about something else there?
You know, parasites need love too. if you take a digital photograph of a leaking power transformer, you'll see these little rods. They call it rod theory. But if you look at the geometry of that charged plasma, you'll see it's not phase conjugate, so it's going to die. So these are called ectoplasm or incubus succubus. But now if you take the same high-speed digital photograph of the ectoplasm, which is the charge, capacitive charge plasma around a human being having some bliss experience, you'll see these orbs. And if you zoom in, you'll see dodecaecosa, and they are phase conjugate. So now this is a little piece of the plasma that learned how to implode and suck. Now you could call that a parasite, but it's just like you and me. It wants to survive.
Yes.
Now, the thing is, you can gather an infinite number of these, but the ones that have a purely distributable wave at their core will ultimately be embeddable and shareable and fractal. So when you actually have an intent, which is a biologically shareable electric wave called pure intention, which means an intention that creates survival for collective genetic memory, then there is something in your aura that can be propagated successfully and therefore will be embeddable. That's called charge implosion. It's measured as a power spectra golden ratio in your aura and your EEG. It means you're imploding. At that point, everything that's ultimately parasitic that tries to enter will only be toasted and feed you. So it's another way of saying the physics of pure intention is that that will burn everything that's not shareable out of your aura. Mm. Now, at a practical level, in terms of astral hygiene, there are some exercises. If you do deep breathing and get under charged, dense water, you have the combination of oxygen saturation and you're underwater and do that several times, you'll feel all the parasites leave your aura. The oxygen is helical, it's implosive. And so there's another exercise you can do. You can bring a comb in your inner vision down through your aura, and you see your aura as a deep blue, and astral tags or parasites or bioplasmic streamers will show up as red or black blobs in your aura, and you literally comb them out. Hmm. So you literally sort your aura. This is introduction to astral hygiene 101, and it's very important.
Hmm. Very interesting. Have you done any kind of photography on the aura of people where you've been able to see this?
Well, goldenmean.info/orb of life, we showed the dodecaecosa structure of the plasma orbs of people having bliss. The essential work on the aura of people in general, that fractality produces medical immortality, or at least clinical health, is, of course, the GDV, gastroesophageal visualization work of Dr. Kuratkov, and we work closely with him. And he's done, you know, there's hundreds of published papers on this. Doctors are using it. It's powerful. So aura diagnosis is now a medical skill. It's teachable. It's highly reputable. And the American Medical Association is using it. It's called GDV. Hmm. For example, you can see by measurement when someone's aura has a hole burnt in it by the old-fashioned cathode CRT screens. You can see when someone's aura has a hole in it, eating too many drugs. You can understand the physics very well, that when you eat certain drugs, hard drugs, etc., you cause your aura to temporarily implode in symmetry directions which are not sustainable. So after the effect of the drug has worn off, your aura is imploded in some places, but the symmetry is not surround sound. And the result is your aura will become holy and permeable, and you'll be more susceptible to parasites and less able to survive death. Hmm. So we suggest that people who have addictions learn the problem of their addiction by measuring their aura for holes medically.
That's very, very interesting. And again, what, the website, the link rather, is that Orb of Life? It's your website, goldenmean.info.
Well, Orb of Life was just the ones on the orbs, but the GDV work we have at goldenmean.info/clinical-info. And of course, there is Dr. Kuratkov, kuratkov.org, and all the work that's been done on the GDV. You can see that the fractality of your aura, which is measurable, is a direct indicator of whether or not you're imploding. And that's going to tell you if you're immortal or not. It's very simple.
All right. Well, there's a lot more information there for people to dig into who want to find out more about that. I want to spend a little bit of time as well with you, Dan, and talk about some of the things that are happening right now as we speak in regards to electrical smog and all this thing with cell phones, different types of microwave frequencies that are bouncing around, Wi-Fi, what have you, electrical sockets everywhere, which means that we have frequencies around us. What's your take on all that? Is all this ultimately bad for us, and do we need to move away from these type of technologies in order to stay healthy, or what's your take on it?
Goldenmean.info/microwave-life-and-death is where we summarize the microwave literature here. I'd like to tell a short story. When Bob Dratch measured Kundalini and bliss, he measured a microwave frequency based on adenosine triphosphate, ATP, the common denominator of all cellular metabolism. And when you scan for that, you can measure bliss in the microwave. meaning that there's a certain bandwidth in the microwave that should be exclusively reserved for biology. Of course, it is not. So it isn't that these high frequencies are inherently evil. It's just like anything, when they're used in a way which does not embed or produce fractality, they create death. And, you know, cell phone microwave is extremely deadly, particularly deadly to Kundalini and Bliss. So I strongly caution against using microwave and cell phone devices. Certainly keep your cell phone out of your aura whenever you can. And when you must have it in your aura, only use a headphone piece. Never put the damn thing near your ear. These things are dangerous and cancerous and poisonous. And, you know, there's even road signs in Spain warning pregnant women to keep these cell phones off their bodies.
I mean,
it's very serious.
How about Wi-Fi then, signals that we can't block ourselves from as easily as with our own cell phone?
I've noticed that the low power Wi-Fi seems to be less destructive, but high power Wi-Fi is very insidious, and I think that it's something to really look out for.
Do you know what the main difference is between low and high powered? Is that just the speed of it, or what are you talking about?
The power densities and the frequencies involved, I believe it's mostly actually literally power density. Now, there's something called spread spectrum technologies, which are much less destructive to the aura, but they're much less used these days in Wi-Fi technologies. Mm-hmm. But I noticed, for example, the higher power Wi-Fi in the UK would drive me absolutely nuts. I mean, my Kundalini just was just drove me nuts.
And
so I could immediately tell that environment.
Really, really. That's interesting. Really? And what's your kind of, what's your reaction to it? Do you get depressed or physically low, or what is the symptoms, if you don't mind explaining?
Nervous and jerky, kind of jumpy.
Really?
Whereas I'm sitting here now in the Wi-Fi box that I'm using at this moment is the French orange.fr. And actually, it's a lower power. It only goes about 100 feet. And I don't find it too bad here. But I do know that I am better, particularly in dream states, with it off.
Yeah. That's interesting. And how about the hertz and the voltage from our electrical systems? Is there a difference between the States and Europe, for instance? We're here in Europe, we have about 220. Is that anything that's damaging in regards to health that you know?
Extremely dangerous. In Europe, we have 50 cycle. In the States, they have 60 cycle. Frequency is the issue mostly. The transformers create nausea. It's just that simple. So all these devices you have in your house that have transformers on them, you really need to unplug the damn things. Best thing you can do is turn the power, the main power off in your house when you go to bed, but at least keep the transformers, only the ones you absolutely need, plugged in, and try to reduce the number that you need.
Mm-hmm.
Electrosmog is extremely damaging to your health. Just let me give you a simple example. I was teaching in Geneva a couple of years ago, and there were two people teaching with me. And we each had a computer and one other little hard disk with it. So there were six, count them, six of those damn little nauseating transformers plugged in the front of the lecture hall.
Mm.
And every single lady in that room got nausea and could not digest.
Mm.
We unplugged those six damn little transformers and everyone in the room went, These things are sickening. They're nauseating. They're disgusting. They're evil. They're unhealthy. And you need to know that. So what you need to do is drastically reduce the amount of electrosmog that you have in your house and then put all of the poisonous shit in one corner and you live in the opposite corner.
Right.
Huh. Now, there are devices, these Faraday blankets and other things, which do help to some extent.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Faraday, because I wanted to ask you regarding a Faraday cage then, because before we looked at this idea about putting seeds into an aluminum cage, for instance. How about the Faraday cage? Is that equally worse then, or as bad then, or what's the score with that?
The Faraday cage is not healthy in the sense that it does not invite in a bioactive electric field. It simply keeps out some of the poison. And notably, it keeps out none of the capacitors. So capacitor coupling goes right through the damn thing. So a Faraday cage is largely useless, truthfully.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, it will keep out certain electromagnetic frequencies, but all capacitive coupling and high frequencies makes it right through. So the damn thing pretty much is not going to help your health much. And the ultimate goal here actually is not isolation, but rather embeddability. So unfortunately or fortunately, there's no excuse, no substitute for nature.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely right. And I guess that we're adding problems upon problems in one way. We're trying to fix one thing, but then another thing pops up that was kind of unexpected, and we get a new symptom of that. And that's very unfortunate in that sense. And I totally agree with you. But in that regard, do you also feel that if the body gets enough rest, let's say during nighttime, where we can recuperate, our nervous system can get back in order, if you know what I mean, do we still have some kind of resistance against this, meaning that we can actually take it for a while? It's not good, I understand that, but it might not kill us if we spend a few hours in front of the computer each day, but we make sure to take a proper rest from it and so forth. What do you think?
Well, that's true, and that reinforces the idea of using some skilled geobiology to actually diagnose your environment, get a tri-field meter, measure the amount of electrosmog, both electrostatic and magnetic, in your environment, inductive, and do something about it. So, yeah, I suggest don't just guess. Measure something and take action. But the bottom line is, let me give you another little example. Mm. If you're standing right now on a concrete floor, chances are your feet feel tired. Whereas if you're standing on a wood floor, chances are your feet feel good. The reason your feet feel tired on that concrete floor is not the concrete. Actually, it's paramagnetic. There's limestone. It's good stuff. The evil is the steel rebar in the damn stuff, which is absolutely poisonous. Hmm. So the reason your feet feel like shit when you're standing on concrete floor is because the steel rebar is sucking your capacitance. Hmm. So this is telling you what you need to do to actually be in an environment to stay alive. Need to be in an environment that's phase conjugate, made of biologic materials. It's simple.
It is very simple. It makes absolutely sense to me in that regard. How about wearing some of the stuff, metal or iron, if we talk about jewelry, earrings, even belt buckles or buttons made of the thing, iron or some kind of metal? Do you think that that's harmful as well to us?
Yeah, very. Actually, the Sufis had it correct. When you go to your Lord, you go like the lover. You take off your damn jewelry. Now, actually, you know, the phase conjugate materials like the gold and palladium can actually help your aura a little bit, just like the right gemstones can make your aura like the breastplate. But, and even then, they need cleansing sometimes. But for most people in Western culture, the things they wear on their body is not phase conjugate. The metals on your body is killing you. Hmm. Anything synthetic on your body is killing you. Just, you know, don't take my word for it. Learn kinesiology. Do some muscle testing. And by the way, you can measure the muscle test with that heart coherence, because it's the same phenomenon. Muscle strength is heart coherence. Hmm. So you put your aluminum little wristwatch on that has a little battery on, which is absolutely fatal for your aura. You take that off your wrist, and your arm strength just got 10 times stronger. Think about it for a minute. You'd never wear any metal on your aura again. You even rush to take the metal change out of your pocket. Get the metal out of your aura. It's very important. You want to live with vital phase conjugate material only in your aura so your aura can grow, because otherwise you die. And your aura growth is absolutely fractal. That's why, you know, polyester is the worst. Cotton is, you know, it's okay, but it's not wonderful because the DNA has been monocultured and treated like shit. Whereas you've got some hemp in your aura. This DNA is vital and happy, and your aura goes, whoopee!
Well, so in regards to clothes, we can say the same thing there then, that the genetically modified monocultured cotton that many people are wearing is not that great. And in regards to that, would you recommend people to buy some stuff out of hemp instead, organically grown hemp or something like that?
Yeah, well, obviously there's a hierarchy of these things. Polyester, sure. And everything synthetic is worse. And cotton is sort of in the middle, then much better would be some vital threads like hemp. Actually, we have a whole new industry that we've started, and if you'd like to join us and be partners, please send me an email. It's called the fractal clothing industry. And, you know, if you put phase conjugate materials, phase conjugate adhesives, and phase conjugate trace mineral sprays, you can make clothing that causes your aura to grow.
That's very interesting. Absolutely. And I totally agree with you in regards to the watch. I never were comfortable with a watch. I haven't worn one in years, and it was just something about it. I didn't understand why at that point, but made me feel so much better to take it off, you know?
That's right. It's just you were hearing your own intuition tell you what your aura needs.
That's probably right. Well, exactly. Well, I mean, there's so many different areas that you've been studying, Dan, and that you're researching. And what are some of the projects that you're involved in right now? Are you just I guess it feels to me that your work are obviously continuous. You've started at one end, so to speak, and you're branching out into all these different fields because, as we all know, by this stage, everything is connected, meaning that every single thing is important and will come up on the radar eventually anyway. But is there something specific that you're doing right now, or lectures, for instance, that you're going to give here in the upcoming future?
Yeah, we have our South France GRAIL conference coming up. We have the Paris on Science of Alchemy next week, and, you know, the usual. But I would like to mention one thing. We started our Calling All Angels project with the John B. Story in Prague conference a couple weeks ago with Vincent Bridges. I'd like to tell your listeners a little bit about the Ophanim Enochian Calling All Angels Survive the 2012 story, if I may, just briefly.
Sure.
You see, when Shakespeare went to Prague under a code name as a spy with John Dee, they were learning that as this end of the age solar maximum approached, the only plasma beings with enough inertia to steer the solar wind would be what you call angels. Actually, it's the Ophanim, the Enochian, the High, the Patal, they're called, the Valnapa, or the Adawi, many names. And John Dee was taught with this showstone that contained these shadows of the charged domain with the Ophanim Enochian alphabet letters, which are the symmetry elements of angel bodies as plasma fields, which became the language Greek, by the way, and the highest form of magic on Earth today, Order of the Golden Dawn. And incidentally, Hertog's book, The Keys of Enoch, doesn't have an Enochian key in the whole book. He had the classic seraphim line, but none of the Enochian Ophanic. But he's a sweet guy. But anyway, the Ophanim Enochian were basically trying to tell us, which was the high ancestors of the Anunnaki, the winged dragons, as it were. Mm-hmm. They were trying to say, look, if you learn this sequence of charge symmetry operations in these visualizations, the high alphabets, the high order magic, the Ophanim Enochian, you can become part of the plasma field of stars actively, which is the physics of why the Ophanim Enochian alphabet was used to make the movie Stargate. So here you got the solar wind coming. Now, who's big enough to get their aura out there and steer that thing? And yet, if nobody's steering it, we are toast. Now, John Dee spent his whole life learning this Ophanim Enochian alphabet, these angel calls. And you know what? He was chicken to try it. He never even tried the damn thing because it was so powerful. So Vincent Bridges, vincentbridges.com, you've seen him on all the Nostradamus shows on the History Channel. And we've been working together for many years. He edited my second book, Alphabet of the Earth Heart. Mm-hmm. He is probably the world's expert on the Ophanim Enochian, and he and I have come up with this plan to gather groups of people to learn to actually call the angels in the high, serious, disciplined Ophanim Enochian angel call teaching, which is really where Golden Dawn was going before they sort of lost the physics. So I personally have been there when these sequences of Enochian calls, as they were, when they called storms the size of continents. I've been there. I've watched it. I know it works, and I know the physics of how it works. And I suggest that the angels are correct to consider us drunk for not calling them. So I'm suggesting that people get interested in the symmetry elements of the plasma beings we call angel, which are the size of galaxies, truly, and start learning that in their own aura, which is the Ophanim Enochian, the angel physics, these Ophanim Enochian calls, which John Dee was trying to teach to Shakespeare, which is why he wrote all his plays about alchemy, which is about fusion, black hole making. Anyway, if you're interested in this project, please contact us, either myself, Dan Winter at GoldenMean.info, or VincentBridges.com. So there you go. There's a little invite to angel science.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. Well, we had Lon Milo Duquette with us not too long ago talking about Enochian magic, and that has a tie in there as well. So that's pretty interesting. I don't know that much about it, but there you go. For people who are interested, can contact Dan or Vincent for more about that. I think we can begin, Dan, to round things up here for this time. I really, really enjoyed having you on. It's always interesting hearing from people like you who are involved in so many different areas and so many different projects at the same time. And beyond that, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with before we end for this time?
Yes, if anyone out there is interested in participating commercially in the development of phase conjugate materials, dielectrics, and magnetics for bioactive electric fields, We're right in a position now where we can actually begin distributing test materials to actually create life force electrically. We can get past this whole idea of the Shem, the altar, as being something you put in church. In fact, a Shem or an altar is something you make that's electrical, that actually creates life. You know, the Ark of the Covenant was a capacitor that could non-destructively contain radioactive materials. This kind of skill is going to be necessary for the coming time. So if you're ready to do this science with us, we'd like to hear from you.
Just a little bit more before we end then on that. The coming time, are you primarily together with Vincent and looking at this idea about the increased danger from potential solar radiation, or is there anything else that you think about when you mention that, the upcoming times?
Well, obviously, I think we're going to have geologic disasters, economic disasters, but mostly solar disasters. The solar minima that just ended, that took so long to end, is a clear sign, as Nostradamus and the solar scientists both are clear, that huge solar storms are coming within the next year or two. And that has tremendous impact on us. So I recommend shelter from high wind, shelter from high water, access to seeds, access to community, distance from the city. It's going to be necessary to be ready. Yes. And so I don't think you need Nostradamus to tell you that it's time to get ready for the high winds.
Very, very interesting. Well, we're definitely going to keep an eye on this and see how things progress. And we'd at some point love to have you back with us on the program, Dan, and talk more. And we can see if we indeed get a rise in solar activity and see some of the consequences of that. We'd love to have you back and talk more about that if that's indeed what's going to happen. What do you think?
Well, thank you. You know, some people said that with the solar going quiet, as long as it did, it means we have a Maunder minimum. But after a Maunder minimum, or during that time, you get this intense solar wind. But during the Maunder minimum last time, the Thames froze over for hundreds of years in a row, and millions of people will starve. So it isn't about warming. It's about creating fractality to have the system as a whole emerge from chaos.
All right. Very good. We've been talking with Dan Winter, and the website again is goldenmean.info. Head on over there to check out more material from Dan, videos, books, CDs, and so forth. And we'll wrap things up here for this time. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Great to have you along with us. We'll be back soon again with more radio, but until then, take good care. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.